KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum, we'll assess foster care in the state of California as a Blue Ribbon Commission will be making its recommendations for repairing a system filled with serious problems, including dependency courts, where major decisions affecting lives of children and their families are made sometimes literally within minutes. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's forum. California presently has the largest foster care system in the nation with some 75,000 children, and each year 4,000 foster youth are emancipated from care in California. Nearly half haven't completed high school, half require government assistance, and 35% become incarcerated. A third of former foster youth have incomes at or below the poverty level, and the majority emancipate without anyone to connect to who will care for them unconditionally. A high-level commission appointed by California State Supreme Court Chief Justice Ron George has spent the past 2 years investigating the foster care system, including emancipation or the formal release from court supervision, and dependency courts, which decide the status of thousands of children. The commission will be making its recommendations for major reforms, including what occurs following emancipation, and in this hour, we want to focus our attention on the committee's recommendations and the status of the state's foster care system. Joining us in studio is Chris Wu. He is Executive Director of Blue Ribbon Commission on Children and Foster Care, Center for Families, Children, and Courts, and welcome. Good morning to you.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning.
Good morning, and glad to have you here. Also glad to have with us in studio Janet Knipp, who is Executive Director of the California Youth Connection. They're a 20-year-old nonprofit foster youth advocacy and empowerment organization for and governed by current and former foster youth ages, 14 to 24. Welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Glad to have you here, and congratulations to her are in order because three members of the California Youth Connection, including Janet Knipp, recently won a prestigious James Irvine Foundation Leadership Award. Also with us in studio is Latoya Brown. She's a member of the California Youth Connection, the San Mateo chapter, foster youth, who turns 18 and therefore transitioned out of foster care on Thursday, August 7th. We'll see whether we should congratulate you on that. I guess we should. Huh? But at the same time, it's a little scary, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, we'll find out more about that as we move along in this hour. Karen DeSa is also with us in studio. She's social services reporter for the San Jose Mercury News and did a one-year investigation into California's juvenile dependency courts and did actually three segments, which I must say really made an impact on this particular reader and host. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Michael.
So let's start out with Christopher Wu. And Chris Wu, let's find out. This is, I should mention, listeners, the first statewide commission to focus on the courts and on foster care, and it was appointed back in 2006 for 2 years, extended to June of 2009, and is implementing or going to implement recommendations. The recommendations are pretty far-reaching, but two particularly rise to the top for me. One is terrible lack of resources, and the other is courts, where briefings, the caseloads are so huge that kids are moved through there in a matter of minutes in some cases. I mean, those seem to loom up to the top for me.
Yeah, the Blue Ribbon Commission is really focused on the courts, and that's really what sets the commission apart from other looks at foster care and child welfare at this high level. The Blue Ribbon Commission, as you mentioned, was appointed by the Chief Justice 2.5 years ago, and the Chief Justice appointed Associate Supreme Court Justice Carlos Moreno as the chair of the commission. He's a foster parent himself. And we have 42 members at a very high level. And another unique thing about the commission is that we have legislators, agency executives, philanthropy, and foster youth, former foster youth, represented on the commission. And there are the official release of the recommendations to the Judicial Council is this Friday at the Judicial Council's meeting. And there are really four overarching recommendations of the commission. One is to keep families together and get families back together when it is safe to do so. And hopefully that will reduce the number of children in foster care and in our dependency courts. The heart of the recommendations is really changing the way dependency courts do business, including
which doesn't often allow for families to stay together in too many instances, from what I read.
Far too often. And that includes recommendations such as looking at the high caseloads that dependency courts have to deal with and the attorneys and social workers in them, and also including children and parents in their own court hearings, making sure that that happens. We also recommend, have a set of recommendations about making sure that there's collaboration between the agencies, the many agencies that provide services and supports to families and children. They have to be able to, for example, to be able to share information and coordinate with each other. It's a complicated system. And we also are recommending that on the local level, there be created similar collaborations as the commission, so that that's where the real action happens, the real change happens on the local level. The last thing you mentioned, resources, and we need to find the resources to get the job done, not only ultimately finding new resources, which of course will be difficult in this budget era, but also
maybe an understatement.
But also prioritizing and reallocating current resources, making sure that foster children and their families have the highest priority of the agencies that, that deal with them.
And all 42 of you were able to, in an affable way, come to similar conclusions.
We started out with broad agreement on a set of principles and values, such as inclusion of children and families. And that really led us to ultimately a consensus on the recommendations. There are 79 specific recommendations under those four overarching categories that I mentioned.
We're talking again with Chris Wu, who's here with us in studio. He is executive director of the Blue Ribbon Commission on Children and Foster Care. And focusing now on the courts, we're going to talk about emancipation as well. Karen DeSaad did a year-long study of the courts. They're secretive. They're dysfunctional. I mean, there are more problems with the courts than you can imagine. And one of the major problems is that kids are the ones who are suffering. Families are suffering. They're getting strangled by the clock, basically.
Absolutely, Michael. You know, despite the really thick cloak of secrecy surrounding the system, you know, the hearings are all confidential. Parents are pretty much threatened with a crime for discussing the particulars of their case and the court documents that pertain to them. Yet when we went inside these courts under special arrangements with the judges, I found a tremendous desire for folks in the system to talk and expose. And there was a lot of many courageous voices in our series that really highlight the changes that Chris is talking about, that the commission is addressing. I mean, imagine you're a parent, you're alleged to have abused or neglected your child, and most of these cases, more than 80%, are cases of neglect and are inextricably linked with poverty and addiction, and overwhelmingly these are people of color that are impacted. So you're on a six-month clock to prove to the court that you deserve to parent your child or you can be permanently separated from that child, and yet every time you show up in court, it's a different attorney. You have minutes to discuss with your attorney your case, then you wait hours, you go into court, it's a minutes-long hearing, you leave completely disillusioned, not understanding what happened. You get someone scribbling on the back of their business card saying, see you at the next hearing, we'll try again then. You're a kid in the system, and you, outside of Los Angeles, pretty much don't even really get a lot of times that you have the right to be in court, that you have a right to be present, that there's a judge overseeing absolutely every aspect of your life, and a lot is at stake for you, not just where you will live, who will care for you, where you'll go to school, but really whether you'll ever see your brothers and sisters again, whether you'll ever see your parents again. You could be subjected to a life in institutions, a revolving set of group homes. really those children in many, many courts are not there to speak with the judges. And
so often they just have no voice at all, really.
No voice at all. And yet what I found most interesting, what really drove this investigation, was the judicial officers themselves saying, we need to hear from these kids. We need to hear from their parents. We need more time. You know, in chambers, in Sacramento, there are 5 extremely busy courtrooms where as many as 30 cases are heard between 9 and 12. And not a single judge, by the way, in any of these 5 courtrooms, they're all referees. And in some cases, referees and commissioners also hear traffic court. So it's not a very highly valued aspect of the system. But saying to me, you know, when you calculate it out, it's 2 minutes per case. Just enough time for the parties to object or submit on recommendations. And if I were a child or parent, I would want more than that.
That doesn't even follow national guidelines.
Doesn't follow national guidelines. And you have folks on the Blue Ribbon Commission and the Judicial Council, like Justice Richard Huffman, saying in any other field of law, this would be considered malpractice. And yet when it's kids' lives on the line and in a system so important to overseeing the lives of these 75,000 precious children like Latoya, who has heard of dependency court? Who among your listeners have even heard this dependency court system?
And I wonder how many of our listeners have heard of what is characterized as submit culture. You want to tell us about that?
Well, interestingly enough, you know, of course, there's a great concern about keeping families together whenever possible. But, you know, we have the example of a judge who felt that the submit culture and attorneys who weren't meeting regularly with their clients and weren't bringing the information to court that she needed to make a decision actually resulted in a decision that literally traumatizes her to this day. She sent a child home for a Christmas holiday where he was killed by his father. And her conclusion, after exhaustive and torturous examination of what went wrong in that case, was that the submit culture, she said, should have bothered me more. It ultimately poses a threat to the health and safety of children. She needed attorneys coming in there and giving her information. You know, good advocacy for children means quality representation for their parents. It means lots of information before the judge and enough time for the judge to hear from the parties, to have a significant proceeding where they can make the best possible decision for these kids because they deserve it, Michael.
Well, you mentioned in your articles also that use the example of Santa Clara and say that in many instances the DA's office who represent often see themselves in an adversarial role where the parents are concerned.
Well, actually, this is a complete aberration. And although we had looked and long heard that Santa Clara County was a model county, we found some real irregularities in the representation. District attorneys generally don't represent kids. This is an interesting courtroom. I mean, everyone has a lawyer. Mom has a lawyer. Dad has a lawyer. If there's a second dad, he has a lawyer. The child has a lawyer. The social worker has a lawyer. There's no one listening in on these proceedings.
Sounds more like Beverly Hills than it does.
It's unusual. But in Santa Clara County, they have prosecutors representing kids, which is almost unheard of nationwide and found in only one other California county, where the judges say this creates a situation that's often too adversarial. They beat up on parents and don't generally bring to the table the kind of neutral position you want. You know, in some cases, kids' attorneys need to advocate for more visits with their parents, for more time, for a chance at reunification. And in other cases, they need to defend positions that are contrary to that. But it should be a very neutral person and not necessarily, according to the experts I interviewed, someone whose office is also prosecuting the parents down the hall in another courtroom.
Michael, one of the things that Karen's comments point out is how, and the commission found this, around the state practices vary greatly between courtrooms, between systems of representation, social service systems, you know, the commission found, though, that the average hearing time averaged about 10 or 15 minutes. And some very life-changing decisions are made in this 10 or 15 minutes, and that includes things like introducing the parties. We also found that full-time judicial officers, judges, commissioners, referees, have approximately 1,000 children at any one time under their oversight statewide. So that's part of the background, I think, that leads to the problems that Karen is describing.
I think it's important for the public to know just how that caseload operates and how impossible it is. And LaToya Brown is a member of the California Youth Connection, San Mateo chapter, foster youth, was emancipated on August 7th. How's it feel to be emancipated?
Oh, wow. It's kind of scary not knowing what's going to happen next. I didn't really have a plan afterwards because my school thing kind of dropped in a while. So I was supposed to go to Santa Cruz, and then, you know, something happened, and I was not knowing where I was going to go. So I'm back in now. So my foster mom's actually let me stay 2 months, so I don't have to look for a place for those 2 months.
So you can make the transition easier. That's great. Not a lot of kids make their way to college. Congratulations. I mean, out of emancipation. I read those statistics earlier. And you do come from one of these families that was broken up by the dependency court.
Yes.
Tell us how that happened.
I never knew my father or my grandmother. They basically raised me from a child till I was 12. So at 12, I was split up from all my brothers and sisters. And so since then, I've been in foster care.
How did you get on the track toward college without parents to guide you, as some would say?
My foster mom, she really pushed me into going to high school, you know, finishing. One thing she helped me with was, like, sports to keep me active in school, make me want to keep my grades up so I can play a specific sport. And so I would say my foster mom, my brothers and sisters, they encouraged me, you know, to stay in, be a role model to my younger brothers and older sisters.
So you're one of the lucky ones. Do you see it that way, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and blessed, I suppose, in many ways. And you've been 3 years with CYC?
Yes.
With California Youth Connection, and feel real enthusiastic about that.
I love CYC. It's like my second family.
Well, tell us about what you'd like to see change in the system. I mean, we've got this Blue Ribbon Commission now and all these recommendations coming out. You, as someone who's been through the system and who has achieved a great deal, what would you like to see?
I would love to see, like, families not be split up. Like, give them a chance, like, find the extra family out there. Like Karen was saying earlier, to have more visits with the family so they can be reunified and not just like, oh, they're out of placement, they're not going back there, have them in foster care, group homes and stuff like that. Just like have regular visits with their parents, grandparents, or family out there so we can have a chance to work things out with our family and, you know, maybe we'll be a family together and not just be split up and not see them ever again.
And what about having a say in these dependency courts? We heard that kids are often just not even heard, that they don't even have a voice.
So me being involved in CYC, I'm speaking for all the foster youth who are not there to speak for themselves. I feel that CYC is, you know, my voice is being heard in CYC. I get to speak on issues that need to be heard from foster care, not seeing your brothers and sisters, having health care issues be cleared, emancipation, housing, education, higher education, and things on that line.
Talk about emancipation, because there are kids who are 18, they're emancipated, and they're thrown out there without any resources, and they're suddenly on their own independently with nothing to fall back on.
There's a program called ILP or ILSP, Independent Living Program, and youth 14 through 21 are able to go, and it's a class where you are infoed about life situations, you know, how to manage money, how to find a job, and things like that. Not a lot of youth are able to go because there's not enough room in a classroom to be filled for these youth. And youth who don't attend these classes do not have the right education to learn how to transition from a foster youth to a former foster youth. And they end up homeless and not have a place to stay. And
it's good to know, at least where the public is concerned, that this is indeed an ongoing concern and should be. And LaToya Brown, again, here with us in studio, is a member of the California Youth Connection. Feels like a family to her, San Mateo chapter, and transitioned August 7th and will be attending UC Santa Cruz as an English major who wants to be a lawyer. well, it's good training, actually. I say that as an English professor. It's very good training. It teaches you all kinds of critical thinking and writing briefs, preparation and all that. Janet Knipe is also here with us, and she's executive director of the CYC, the California Youth Connection, and they're an advocacy group. She's been with them for 14 years, but working in child welfare for 20 years. We're seeing more young people being brought into not only your organization, but the whole process. I mean, there's a trajectory here. It's finally happening.
Well, California Youth Connection indeed is growing. We have 28 chapters now throughout California. It's a county-based membership organization of current and former foster youth, as you mentioned, between the ages of 14 and 24. And young people join CYC just the same as they would join any after-school club. They join it to and receive training and technical assistance from us to be able to speak out about their experiences in care and begin to frame their issues in a policy-oriented kind of way. And also work collaboratively with policymakers towards systems reform. So just as LaToya said, young people in CYC are very passionate about making changes in the system so that others coming up in the foster care system behind them have a better experiences and better outcomes than they experienced. So indeed, CYC is growing. As you mentioned, it's been around for 20 years now. It started as a very loose association of chapters and has grown with the number of young people that we have touched or trained in the thousands over the years. So it's a wonderful place for young people to not only build their capacity in leadership, which will help them as they transition from care, use those leadership skills that they've learned in many, many ways to contribute to our society later on as adults, but also they're learning how the political system works, how to make change, and how to work in a collaborative kind of way towards something that will reap benefits for all foster youth throughout California.
Well, let's talk about what those benefits might be, because with respect to policymaking and reform of policy, you have a couple of legislators at least who are very sympathetic. Daryl Steinberg,
yes,
and Karen Bass, they both,
yes,
have spoken of their support for foster care and the need for reform on this program. But you've got budget constraints I was saying before, it's almost an understatement to talk about them as budget restraints.
Absolutely. This is a very difficult budget climate, and we realize that. At the same time, we couldn't have two better champions in Sacramento, and the governor has also been very supportive of foster care issues. So it's very hard to say how this will all turn out. This is an ongoing, long-term process for anyone who's been connected with CYC or will be connected in the future. We realize we may lose some ground, and we have to keep at it. There's nothing that we can't let up. Foster youth are not going away in California. It's true the numbers of foster youth are decreasing, and that's a positive kind of thing. And the idea about keeping young people in their families wherever possible is something that young people in CYC have championed and supported for years. So all of that is true. At the same time, we can't forget the young people that are still in the foster care system now. So we will work very, very hard to bring about the youth voice to the policymaking table at every opportunity so that the lawmakers hear directly from people like LaToya about the consequences of their decisions. So will it be a difficult budget year? Absolutely. Will we keep at it? Absolutely.
Well, you're optimistic and dogged, if I may say so,
yes,
in the positive sense, and that's heartening to hear because this is a process that certainly needs reform, emancipation, as well as the dependency courts. And what I'm going to do now is open up the phone lines. I know there are many of you who certainly have concerns, questions, comments you may want to bring to the table here, so to speak, and feel free to join us. Chris Wu, go ahead.
Could I just add a comment? And likewise, the Blue Ribbon Commission sees its recommendations as a blueprint and a long-term blueprint, given when we have more resources. But I just wanted to say about emancipation or aging out that the Blue Ribbon Commission heard a lot of testimony and did a lot of study of this issue and recommended that foster care services and supports and court oversight be available to youth between 18 and 21. And in fact, there is legislation moving through Congress right now to make that happen.
Well, let me make our callers happen. In fact, let me give you the phone number and invite you to join us. It's toll-free, 866-733-6786. You're welcome to join the program. Again, our toll-free number is 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum@kqed.org. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're talking this hour about the foster care system, particularly in light of a study by a Blue Ribbon Commission headed by Chris Wu, who's here with us in studio. California's juvenile dependency courts are charged with protecting children from abuse and neglect, but they are often troubled with high attorney caseloads and too little time to consider cases crucial to a foster child's future. And Karen DeSau with us did a whole series on this for the San Jose Mercury News. We're taking a look at recent proposals to improve the system, and emancipation also falls into this. And Janet Knipe is with us, Executive Director of California Youth Connection, and they're a 20-year-old nonprofit foster youth advocacy and empowerment organization governed by current and former foster youth ages 14 to 24. And one of those foster youth is also with us in studio, Latoya Brown, who is a member of the California Youth Connection, San Mateo chapter, and who was recently emancipated at age 18, August the 7th. If you'd like to join us, you are welcome to do so. Our toll-free number is 866-733-6786, or you can join us by email forum@kqed.org. And by the way, I was saying how I don't necessarily like to editorialize, or I eschew it to some extent, but it's always struck me that foster care in California and nationwide is an extremely important subject for many obvious reasons, but for some that are often overlooked, having to do just with the fact that these are youth who are not only the future, of course, and the future of California socially and economically, but also that many of these youth, as I said, wind up incarcerated or wind up in trouble and wind up without resources that would assure or impede their falling into trouble. And the result of that is that there are more problems, of course, for the greater society that can be headed off with the kind of reforms that I hope we're talking about here and putting forward. Let me go to your calls, and let me begin with Lynn. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm wondering, a lot of people who can't be foster parents, and I'm wondering if there's a program or system for people who would want to adopt an emancipee for, like, financial help for transition or college.
Let's move from the deafening silence here and have someone step up to the Chris Wu. Can you answer the question?
Meaning adoption after emancipation? So this would be after a child reaches 18 years old. We actually, at the Judicial Council, every year they do adopt a resolution proclaiming November Adoption and Permanency Month. And we had a very compelling story at the Judicial Council meeting last year from a woman who grew up in foster care and aged out or emancipated, but then was subsequently adopted by her social worker. And so it does happen, and we don't believe, and the commission doesn't believe, that teenagers are somehow unadoptable, as the label has sometimes been put on older children.
I'm sorry, you were going to say something, Janet?
I think the other important point about the caller's question is the notion that young people in California need to exit the foster care system at age 18. And there's research that shows that the age of stability, if you will, for all young people today, and the age of stability is defined by when they're really not relying on their parents or family members for places to stay, doing laundry, buying food, that they're really self-sufficient and on their own. And that age is 26. And we're expecting young people who are coming out of the foster care system and have experienced a significant amount of trauma in their lives to do that at age 18. So
let me just add a few facts to that. The majority who come out are not only not prepared for adult living, as you're suggesting, but 65% need housing at the time of their emancipation. I mean, this in itself is a pretty shocking statistic, but there are statistics that also show that those who are helped, like Latoya, even for a brief period of time after they turn 18 and after they become emancipated, just looking at some stats here, two times as likely to stay in school, three times as likely to go to college, less likely to become pregnant or involved in the criminal justice system. Those are just the facts, ma'am.
If we were able to keep young people in the foster care system until age 21, the outcomes for young people in foster care or exiting the system would change dramatically. So 18, for any of us who have children or no children, closely young adults, and imagine someone needing to become completely self-sufficient at age 18, it's pretty, it's very challenging, and it's not incumbent upon us to forget about these young people, because they're all of California's responsibility, and that responsibility should extend past age 18.
Michael, the other thing that can be done before a child becomes 18, and it's a policy that California Youth Connection has championed, is really finding permanent connections for youth, whether that becomes an adoptive family or not, but making sure that every youth in foster care has someone who has a lifelong commitment to them to be someone they can call when they have problems, someone they can, somewhere they can go for holidays and go on school breaks, for example.
And we'll go to more of your calls. Linda, join us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just have a couple of comments. One is for LaToya, that she hang in there. It can be done. I had an outstanding experience with my foster care family. I was in the county of Santa Clara, but that was 30 years ago, and there was even less awareness then. But I still call them my own family. And the one thing that I have to say that I haven't really heard specific information about is that there was an informal relationship between other members of my biological family and my foster family. My grandmother and an aunt were very involved in my life and stayed involved, and my foster family embraced that relationship. And it gave me a connection to both families, and now for holidays, we all spend time together. My children, I've got three kids of my own, and finished college, and my children consider this my whole extended family, and it really worked beautifully. So on the good side of it, I can say that I know what it can be, and hopefully we'll get back involved when my kids are a little bit older to help out the kids that are out there now. But LaToya, hang in there, honey. It can be done.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thank you for the call. LaToya, talk about how it's working now for you with respect to foster family and biological family.
Like the caller was saying, my foster parents does encourage me to stay in contact with my grandparents. So I go to my grandparents every once in a while. We stay contacted. She helps me out a lot, like, you know, money if I need it. So that's a good thing. My foster mom is, like, really involved in me connecting with them.
Good. Let me get some more calls on, and we go to Oakland next. Susan, join us. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling because I did hear one of your guests say that foster care is on the decrease, and I in light of what a couple of people have been saying on your program, that sounds alarming to me. I would like to see foster care on the increase because I live in the heart of Oakland, and I see abuse of child abuse and neglect all around me all the time, and I also see a burgeoning crime rate, the latest in broad daylight, in a place of business, everybody held at gunpoint, everybody having to strip off all their clothes. I think everyone at this moment listening to this should think about, what if it happened to me, how would I feel? And I'd like to see something done about children giving birth to children unwanted in this world. Thank you.
All right, thank you for the call. Karen Desai, can you comment about the decrease in numbers and what we know along those lines?
Well, what we hear and what we've heard as recently as this whole process with the Blue Ribbon Commission to solicit comments on their proposed recommendations from presiding judges in the county where I work, Santa Clara County, of the juvenile courts, is that foster care is unfortunately not the solution to the ills that this woman refers to, that unfortunately you have troubled, economically disadvantaged communities, yes. But unfortunately, as the statistics you mentioned reference, kids coming out of the foster care system are increasingly criminalized. And unfortunately, there's a tragic crossover between the juvenile dependency system and the juvenile delinquency system, which means kids bounce from foster homes to juvenile hall and in and out of criminality. So unfortunately, it's not the catch-all solution. And the data are in on kids aging out of the system. And I think that's one of the reasons that reform efforts across the country and in the state of California are focusing on the courts where the decisions are made. And, you know, I just tell you about one young man that we profile because his story is so remarkable. And I just wanted to say briefly that the California Youth Connection is a tremendous organization that has made my coverage of foster care possible because, as you've heard from LaToya, these kids have a knowledge within them about what has happened and what needs to happen that none of us grown-ups can articulate well at all. So when we allow their voices to be heard, we have a blueprint for change. And as an example, the young man that we profiled on day three, he was growing up in long-term foster care. He was bouncing around group homes in Alameda County, actually. And Something in him said, I have to be in court. If they're deciding my life, I'm going to be there. And he did have the support of CYC, but he also knew in his heart, sometimes he would wait for hours and hours, 3-4 hours, and be in court for 2 minutes with court speak flying over his head. He had no idea what was going on half the time. An attorney would bump into him in the hall and say, hi, I'm your attorney. Let's go in there. But yet this kid persisted. And yet when he was defying the odds on his high school graduation, when his final exams were set, the court was unable to reschedule his final hearing, which is so curiously known as an emancipation hearing. I mean, in what other realm do we use the word emancipation? Maybe we'll leave that for another show, Michael. But at any rate, this young man missed his final hearing. And years later, he told me, he said, you know, I wanted to know what that judge would have said to me at that final hearing. I wanted some clothes. I wanted some help with housing. I wanted to know what this person in robes who had sat in as my parent all these years, how were they going to send me off in the world? Were they proud that I had stayed in school? Did they care that whether I had long-term housing or the possibility of continuing my education? And he missed that final hearing. This young man, fortunately, we were able to tell his story, and he inspired statewide legislation, which was just passed by and signed into law by Governor Schwarzenegger, which is sponsored by the chair of the Assembly Judiciary Committee, Dave Jones. And Dave Jones was inspired by reading about Zayron Frazier, and who, by the way, is headed to university now in Hawaii and is a leader in the CYC. He said, you know what? Why is there a court system that couldn't accommodate a kid who was about to take his final exams and graduate out of foster care? Why is it that we couldn't have given Zayron his final hearing and his day in court and his right to speak? So moved by his case, this law was introduced, which now basically strengthens existing law, allowing all children 10 and above to participate more, not only to be transported and arrive at their hearings, but to participate, to be allowed to speak. It's a little bit technical. It's basically about judges having to ask and make sure if the kids aren't there, why they're not there, and postponing the hearings, essentially, if they're not there. But this young man's story inspired that legislation.
Well, as long as we're talking about inspiring legislation, actually, Janet Knight, let me go to you, because CYC is backing a lot of legislation that's moving forward. What would you like particularly to highlight here?
Well, I think I'd like to also just compliment Karen initially, because this this piece of legislation that just passed that she referred to is extraordinary, and Zayron's efforts here are representative of other young people throughout CYC and throughout the state, and they do care very, very much about being able to be involved in their court hearings in the room where things are happening. And I think this is a perfect example of how CYC works. There is a legislative committee of young people who look at all of the legislation that's happening in Sacramento, and they pay attention to the amendments and the whole legislative process. They meet on a monthly basis to consider the legislation, whether they want to support it, whether they don't want to support it. So oftentimes they're brought to Sacramento to provide expert testimony and to inform lawmakers on a specific piece of legislation. So the idea that young people are educated about how the political system works is crucial. At the same time, listening to them and their experiences and having them frame their issues for a policy level is the way that policymakers can be most informed about making the right decisions.
But I'm looking at a lot of specific legislation here that's been put forward that CYC youth support. There are a number of assembly bills, some of them authored, in fact, by Karen Bass. There are assembly bills authored by Assemblyman Mays, Senate bills, Senator Romero and Senator Steinberg. In other words, there's a lot in the hopper, and I'm just wondering if there's anything that particularly you wanted to emphasize at this point in the way of serious reform.
Well, I wouldn't say anything in particular. I would say we have worked very, very closely with Karen Bass. We have worked very closely with Daryl Steinberg. We care very, very much about the continued relationship with all of the members of the Select Committee and all of those pieces of legislation the youth and CYC support.
Michael, one of the recommendations of the commission that would really help address the caller's concerns about what's going on in her neighborhood is the fact that the federal funding for foster care right now is largely limited to paying for out-of-home care. So it can't be flexible enough to help prevent foster care and provide services and supports in the community that might keep kids out of foster care. And as Karen mentioned, long-term foster care is not a solution to anything.
We'll go to more of your calls. We're going to go to Philadelphia. Mike, join us. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. Mike, how's it going?
How are you?
I tuned into the broadcast a little late. It's when the discussion centered around teenage adoptions, and I just wanted to share. I was a natural-born child in a family of seven, three natural-born, four adopted. And, you know, my older brother is 42. I'm 30 now. I guess he was adopted when I was 11, 17. And, I don't know what panelists said it, but 26 is kind of like the age where a lot of children that were in the system for a while, where they start to mature and can be out on their own and be independent. That was pretty much right on in this case. So I just wanted to share, I guess.
No, I thank you for that and appreciate your call. And we'll move on to Michelle, who has been waiting patiently here. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Yes, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to say thank you very much for airing this. You guys do a bunch of shows with foster care involved, and I appreciate it a lot. However, I'm as an alumni, 12 years out, I'm 30 now, and I got out when I was 17, so 13 years out of the foster care system. I participated in ILP and ILSP, the Independent Living Program. However, I didn't really feel like it was really sufficient, and again, the age of 26 is right on as far as when I really got what it was to be independent. But I learned about financial aid. I learned about my checkbook. I learned about grocery shopping and filling out a job interview or an application. But things as far as being financially sustainable or avoiding credit card debt or, you know, being able to measure materiality success versus finishing school, I mean, I thought to have an apartment, a car, and to have a paycheck was to be independent versus finishing school, taking advantage of financial aid and scholarships that were provided. I was trying to do everything, so.
And here you are.
I mean, I'm doing great.
Yeah, good.
I work in an accounting firm and doing fine, but I just feel like there's so much that anybody can just seep through these cracks and on your own, whether you're a foster care kid or you're fortunate to live with your parents. I had my Medicare taken away. I mean, I had to file for Medi-Cal, and that was a headache.
Well, Michelle, appreciate hearing from you this morning, and I thank you for the call. And we're hearing from a number of people via email. I wanted to go to some of the emails. Here's Cecile, who says, please ask your guests to comment on the role of court-appointed special advocates, CASA, in assisting children caught in the dependency system. Chris Wu?
Well, the Blue Ribbon Commission has a specific recommendation to increase the availability of court-appointed special advocates in California. There are programs in approximately 43 counties out of California's 58 counties, and all of the large counties have programs. But because of the limited resources in order to supervise and train the volunteers, the CASA programs can only cover about 10% of the caseload. And when I say volunteers, court-appointed special advocates uses volunteers to both mentor and report to the court about foster children. And by and large, it's a one-on-one situation where a CASA only has responsibility to deal with one child at a time. And so it becomes a very close relationship oftentimes, and it's very valuable to the court. And we believe that the ideal situation would be for each child to have both an attorney and a CASA in most instances.
And again, Chris Wu is Executive Director of the Blue Ribbon Commission on Children and Foster Care. Here's Regina, who writes, we appreciate the Blue Ribbon Commission's recommendations, including the recommendations aimed at keeping children at home. Unfortunately, though, some children will need to be removed for their own safety. In that case, they go to live with a relative caregiver or a foster parent. California is not recruiting, retaining, and supporting caregiver families adequately. This was recently emphasized in California's federal review. Not only does this affect the immediate living situation for children, it also affects permanency in the long run for children who cannot return home, because caregivers are overwhelmingly the permanent home for children who cannot return home. Yeah,
and oftentimes caregivers aren't paid enough. And one of the commission's recommendations is to increase the pay, particularly for family caregivers. And that is by far the preferred type of caregiving as opposed to group care or congregate care, as it's sometimes called.
A couple more emails before I go to more of your calls. Here's Steve, who says, my partner and I recently adopted a beautiful child through the county's Foster to Adopt program. I just want to commend the city for how well this process worked for our new family. In our situation, the birth parents were given a year to take advantage of the city's services and fulfill their parental duties. They were unable to do so, so our adoption was completed. While a year may not seem like enough time to get clean from the birth parents' point of view, this is an eternity in the critical development period of a young child. All during the protracted legal process, children get older, lack security, and become harder to adopt as they get older. I just want to point out that the speed of the process needs to be balanced between the goal of reuniting the child with the birth parents with the needs of the child to have a safe, secure home in a reasonable time. Point well taken. And here's Kurt, who writes, how many California foster children are foreign-born? Is the situation exacerbated by misguided immigration policies? Does the issue of keeping families together often involve family members who are foreign nationals and subject to current immigration policies? Anybody shed any light on that? I guess we don't know. But
well, I know that there are immigration laws to actually assist undocumented children who are unaccompanied by their parents and can't safely return to their countries. I think one of the things that the courts and the attorneys need to be able to do is have the time to look into those things like immigration and other issues that children may need help with legally.
And can I just add, Michael?
Karen DeSa.
You know, Chris makes a good point. The court needs time, okay? So unfortunately, what we have in California is, in some counties, we documented the case of judges hearing 135 families' cases in a single day. I mean, can you imagine such a thing? Attorneys carrying caseloads of 500 and 600 when standards nationally determined by very reputable organizations like the American Bar Association saying 75 to 100 is maximum, is the only thing humanly possible. You know, voices of these children in these systems describing what's going on for them, what they need, what they want, what their fifth placement in the last year is like for them, need to get to the court. Okay, so they need to either...
They need to get off the assembly line and
right,
get to the court. Really.
Absolutely, and I'll just give you an example real quick of one attorney I interviewed in the Central Valley who carried 300 children's cases, and she said basically her policy was she tried to see the children very quickly in between her breakneck pace of hearings every day, if they were there. If not, her policy was basically if they're 5150, she'd go to see them, which meant they got a personal visit when they were hospitalized for attempting suicide.
Yeah, 5150 essentially means psychotic or...
Right. So when they tried to kill themselves, her policy was she would go visit them in the hospital. Those kids warranted a visit. Well, that's too late. And unfortunately, you know, this is a situation we find ourselves in California. You know, there are many, many problems. The foster care system is vast and sweeping, and there's a lot of things to discuss. But when we look at the courts, I think it's really important for people to understand that these are where every single twist and turn of the fate of these families is decided. And it's very critical that these caseloads be brought down as the Blue Ribbon Commission is recommending, according to child welfare experts who have examined this system.
Dawn, thanks for waiting. You're on forum. Good morning.
Good morning. I am president of the Foster Parent Association in Santa Clara County, and I spent some time with Karen DeSa last year. She was interviewing us for this article. There's a couple of things I wanted to point out. One is she said a few minutes ago foster care is not the solution, which I completely agree with. The problem is there's got to be a middle ground there. Returning kids to their parents is also not the solution when they're not going to be safe and well cared for. It seems to be the culture in our county, Santa Clara County at this point, that family at all costs is really what it's about. Nobody's ever taking into account the best interest of the child anymore. It's just about returning children to families. And that is not always the safest alternative.
Yeah, indeed, and I thank you for that. In fact,
thank you, Don.
Here's a listener named Margaret who says that she manages a program in San Mateo County near Santa Clara called Fostering the Future. We're a collaboration made up of the Silicon Valley Community Foundation, several nonprofits, and the county's child welfare system. We work to help young people in and emancipated from foster and kinship care develop relationships, opportunities for involvement, and engaging experiences that will help them have improved outcomes in adulthood. One of the challenges we face is the sharing of information among all the groups trying to provide support to these young people. How can we put teeth into the recommendations of this commission and share this information? Chris Will?
Well, the commission is also going to be developing an implementation plan. And I mentioned before that the need for collaboration on the local level. The commission really exists in an atmosphere where we have some unprecedented collaboration on a statewide level between our commission. The assembly has a select committee on foster care that was headed by Karen Bass and now headed by Jim Bell from Santa Clara County, and a partnership between public agencies and private philanthropy through something called the Co-Investment Partnership, and the state interagency team, which is composed of agencies dealing with foster children and their families through education, health, mental health, et cetera. And so we want to bring that era of collaboration to local counties, where in some counties it already exists, and we want to build on the collaboration that already is taking place.
Well, good luck to you, and thank you for all the work you've done, and I hope that implementation moves forward. We'll, of course, continue to monitor and stay abreast of what you're doing. And Chris Wu, again, is Executive Director of the Blue Ribbon Commission on Children and Foster Care, Center for Families, Children, and Courts. Virginia from Oakland says, tomorrow, Wednesday, August 13th, there will be an engaging event to raise awareness about the foster system and unite Bay Area youth. Sponsored by high school juniors from Coro, exploring leadership program in Oakland. Be at San Antonio Park, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Free admission, free food, live music, guest speaker, organizations representing foster youth. Her grandson is one of the fellows working on the event. Want to thank Karen DeSaw from the San Jose Mercury News, and thank Janet Knipe from California Youth Connection, and Latoya Brown from California Youth Connection. Continued success and good luck to you, Latoya. Thank you all for joining us. For KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation, and the Bernard Osher Foundation, supporting higher education and the arts.